God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Anybody within their first 30 days? All right, all veterans. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary movement around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12. Please help me welcome our panel this evening, Michael B. and Jake.
Thanks, please.
I'm going to read the first paragraph, then pass it over to Jake to share for a little bit. Then he's going to pass it to Michael and then back to me. So the first paragraph tonight, we're going to start step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Jake.
Thanks, Joe. My name's Jake. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jake.
I'm really grateful to be sober. And I'm really grateful to be here. This is my home group. And Amy, thank you for asking me to speak tonight. My sobriety date is September 28, 1993. Very grateful to have celebrated 30 years on my last anniversary. And what that really means is that I haven't taken a drink. I've stayed in AA and I haven't died. So here I am. And I'll be the first one to tell you that I haven't done this thing perfectly, except to not take a drink. There have been times in my sobriety where the last thing on my mind is wanting to help someone else. It's all about me. I still have that part of my alcoholism. But if you also came to me and you said, what's your favorite part in the big book? It'd be that second paragraph. When I got to AA, I didn't even know I was getting ready to go to AA. I was being sent to rehab by a guy that I later found out had 13 years continuous sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And right before I left his office, he looked at me and he goes, "What are you afraid of?" He could just see the terror of, like, I'm so ate up with my drinking and drug use, I don't even know what to do. And here I am in front of this guy, you know, thinking I'm in, like, the worst trouble of my life, getting ready to go to a drug and alcohol rehab. I didn't even know what that meant. And I said, what am I going to do now with my life? Like, what am I going to do for friends? And he said, well, I'm getting ready to send you to a place that's going to send you to a place. And if you do what those people tell you to do and you don't drink and you get involved in what they ask you to get involved with, you'll never have to worry about that again a day in your life. And that led me to rehab, which gave me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which they took me through some steps. They gave me a lot of information. They were just pumping me full of recovery information, and they started taking me to meetings. And then later on in my recovery, like, I read this paragraph and I'm like, that's exactly it. Like, my life has taken on a new meaning. Like, I feel a sense of purpose. I've gotten some recovery. I've watched some people recover, to have a host of friends. I mean, I have friends all across the world that I know from going to meetings all over this country and in different parts of the world. But at the very end of the day, there's a part, one of our prayers, you know, it says, our job is to fit ourselves to be maximum service to God and our fellows. And the third step prayer, I look at it as like, I'm standing in front of my creator saying, here I am. It's a pretty powerful thing to me to be like, make me as useful to other people as possible. And I'm willing to turn myself over to that. And what does that really mean? And I always like think about my own experience, like prayer and inventory to me are the two biggest like tools that I've been given. But when I use those tools, it's like the, what comes through to me is get out of your own way and go help someone else. Like, that's it. Like, I pray, and the most clear direction in any prayer I get is go be helpful. And then who am I most helpful to? Other alcoholics. And that's what it talks about in here. And then the last thing I'll say about this specifically is I see a lot of people get right up to that point. And that's why I say, like, a lot of times I get right up to that point and think, okay, I'm good. I feel connected. I'm praying. I'm using this stuff. And then I forget that I need to turn around and reach back to the next person and help them. Like, I need to take it all the way through the 12th step and not just get myself fixed. So thanks.
Thanks, Jay. Okay. We'll go ahead and pass over to Michael.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name's Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
And Michael.
My sobriety date is October 1st of 1991. My home group is the West Kent Group. If you are here tonight and you do not recognize me, it is not you. I'm relatively new in the area. I have moved 6 times in sobriety. The good news is, in sobriety, moving does not involve a black plastic trash bag and a midnight move on the 30th of the month. Companies actually paid me to move. So I've moved a lot in sobriety. I've been here in Norfolk about a year, and I feel like I've come home. I'm grateful that Amy asked me to do this this evening for a couple of reasons. It's always a joy to share on the 12th step. But in our literature, it very specifically says, and I'll quote one quote tonight. On page 21 of As Bill Sees It, there's a letter from Bill to a newcomer called Citizens Again. And Bill explains to the newcomer that 12-step work is awfully important in early sobriety. Bill says, I couldn't have stayed sober without it. This is the founder saying, I could not have stayed sober if I didn't do the service work I did. He created AA. He says, but at some point, we need to carry this message outside of AA, right? And that ultimately, we do this to stay sober. So thank you, Amy. I'm grateful that you gave me an opportunity to stay sober tonight. I hope that, we've got a big, big book here and a big guy, and I'll just be the plucky comic relief and the color commentary. I'm a big believer that all we have is our stories. You know, we share our experience, strength, and hope. And because I'm new in Norfolk, maybe tonight will be a chance for me to allow you to get to know me a little better, and we'll see how it goes. I think the very first thing I want to say about the step is to talk about the step itself. It's tempting for me to think that the most important concept of that step is spirituality. I think I'd be missing the point if I thought that. For me, the most important concept in that step is the word the. I came to AA hating everything about you. Your meetings were, you know, just ick. And your people's sense of humor was bizarre. And I had issues that you had no interest in hearing. No matter how epic they were, you just weren't interested. And I wanted a lot of things. I wanted a job. I wanted my family back. I just wanted a lot of stuff. And I got issues, and you need to know what they are so you can help me fix them. But the most important word in the step is the word the. Alcoholics Anonymous has never promised me anything except I would have a spiritual experience. That is the result of these steps. Doesn't say a result. Our sister fellowship, Narcotics Anonymous, they've changed the wording slightly. It says having had a spiritual awakening as a result. AA practices its own corporate humility, I believe, by insisting that the only thing that they guarantee us for working these steps is that we will have a spiritual experience. What that looks like for each of us will be different. We are charged with carrying the message. For me, this message that the step talks about is, no matter what I did, I could not stay stopped from drinking. I quit drinking thousands of times. I quit drinking for hours at a time. I could not stay stopped for any length of time. I tried many different things. Nothing worked. I finally came to AA, and I asked a higher power, as it made itself known through the membership of Alcoholics Anonymous, to help me stay sober, and I have not had a drink since. That is this message for me. I hope as we color this step up over the next hour or so that I'll be able to tell you how that happened. There's a section in there that says there are many things that we must not miss. I was newly sober, and I made the mistake of asking Tom to sponsor me. And I went to Tom and I said, you know, Tom, I don't seem to have any friends in AA. And he says, there's a reason for that. And I said, yeah, what's that? He says, they're doing the work. Oh, I get about little by slowly doing the work. Months goes by. I'm starting to feel a little better, but I notice I'm still going home alone, feeling kind of lonely. I go to Tom and I say, Tom, I don't feel like I'm, you know, getting invited to Denny's like all the cool kids are. I'm just not feeling it. And he says, you know, there's a reason for that. I said, look, I'm doing the work. And he says, exactly. Don't ever forget that Alcoholics Anonymous are meeting halls filled with people who may or may not be alcoholic. Not everybody needs to work these 12 steps to not die. You keep walking this path of recovery. You do what you need to do to stay sober, and you will attract the people to you who are supposed to be attracted to you. The mistake I had made was coming into AA thinking that I could get folding chair sobriety and that I could inject myself into the cool kids club right over there in the second row. I want to be one of those cool kids. And what Tom told me is, no, you do the work, and the people that need what you have will be attracted to you. And that is what step 11 is all about. But I did that, and because I was willing to do that, I've arrived where I am here tonight with you folks. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. For the next reading, we're going to skip over to page 91. See your man alone, if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn to talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Jake?
Thanks. one of the things I appreciate in here is it's very much like just a playbook of like how to deal with a newcomer, how to talk to him. I believe like my greatest strength is my story. I believe that for everyone in here, that we all have our own experiences with drinking, what got us to AA. And I've had a lot of time to look at that experience and analyze it and inventory it and pray about it and think about how to turn it around and share it with somebody else. And the times where I feel like I've connected the most with another alcoholic is when I talk about my own drinking and I was just talking about this with somebody the other day who was asking me about it, and it was like this. It was like this individual is not in AA, is in no need of coming to AA. I've been around them when they've drank socially, and they're like, I'm having two drinks tonight, and they stop at, like, you know, a couple of inches left in the second drink, and they just leave it there. And I'm like, well, I don't understand that, because I never put the glass down, like, once I pick it up. But they asked me about I was 17 when I got sober. Like, was it an age thing? Was it a phase thing? And I said, no, it was an honesty thing. It was what happens to me when I start putting drinks into my body? I just start drinking. I never remember thinking like, I'm going to just go out and have two drinks. Like, my mind just doesn't go there even today. I mean, I don't want to anything, you know? But it was, I'm not going to go as far as I did last time. It was, I'm only going to drink tonight and not smoke pot. I'm only going to drink tonight and not do other things, or I'm only going to do those other things and not drink tonight. Right. And then as soon as I start talking about that with her, her eyes glaze over. She's like, I don't understand that. Like, why couldn't you just stop? And I'm like, well, that's the difference between being a normal drinker or someone who can just drink and not succumb and doesn't have alcoholism. And when I start talking about drinking like that, when the idea of a good night was a pack of Camel filters and 5-6 packs of beer and a bottle of Jack Daniels, and the guy across the table is nodding his head and he's licking his lips and he wants to go outside and have a cigarette because we're inside the Starbucks, not outside the Starbucks, then I know I'm connecting. I know, like, okay, that guy's thinking about his drinking the way I'm being honest with myself and other people about the way I drink. And I like here too. It's like, to me, there's a certain amount of freedom. I don't have to convince anybody of anything. I can just share my story. And if they relate to it and want to ask questions, well, what did you do about that? Oh, well, here's what happened to me. And then I share that. And that's exactly what it says to do. We just talk about our drinking. And then, we don't try to push any solutions on anybody. And if they want us to tell some war stories and swap some of the good times, we do that. And if we want to get down in the morose, like being up on top of a train and almost being killed and vomiting, walking down the street, drinking rum, and then, going into the house and continuing to drink, even though that's probably alcohol poisoning at that point, like, we can share those stories too. And that's what got me was, I came to AA and I started talking about that stuff, and they went, yeah, we drank like that too, and we got a solution for that. So anyway, I just think that that's really, like, key. Like, I just share my experience and really honestly about what happened to me, and anyone that can relate to that, if they want to get some help with it, I can show them what worked for me. So thanks.
Thanks, Jake. Michael.
Thank you, Joe. There is a drawing, a picture in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sure most of you have seen it. There's two gentlemen in a hospital talking to the man in the bed. Most of you familiar with it? I bring that up because the very first line in the reading of this paragraph says, see your man alone if possible. And I think that deserves to be put in context. It's tempting to think that means I should go willy-nilly off by myself anytime I'm called to do 12-step work, especially to rescue a guy who wants to get sober from the perils of alcoholism. And that's just not the case. If we read before on page 90, where we are is we're with the family. Early AA was called to talk to the family, the wife, the people closest to the alcoholic in trouble. So when we read "See Your Man Alone, if possible," it's in reference to see him away from his family. Up until then, his family's been all up in his business, and yours too. And what the book is saying now is, now that you've had a chance to get to know the family, to get to know what the issues are, see your man alone. I bring this up because in early sobriety, and I got sober in Frederick, Maryland, which is about 45 minutes west of Baltimore. And it didn't seem to matter what meeting I went to, Mike P was there. And Mike P was, I don't know, about 6'3", disgustingly good looking. He worked for CSX Railroad. He'd been sober 5 or 6 years, walked on water. I hated him immediately. He was Mr. AA. And I found out his last initial was P. So in my mind, I'm starting to call him Mike the Prick, because it didn't matter what the topic was in the meeting. Mike the Prick said, "Never go on a 12-step call alone." There is a danger in giving people your phone number in meetings. And the danger is sooner or later, one of them might call it. And it was a winter Wednesday evening after a 16-hour shift at my job, and I'm cold and wet, and it's so late I can't even make an AA meeting, and I've stopped at the local Chinese place, and I've got a bag of Chinese food in my hand, and as I open the apartment door, my phone's ringing, and I pick it up, and it's Dr. J. We called Dr. J, Dr. J, because he practiced medicine without a license in Florida for 12 years before he got busted. And Dr. J had called me and explained that he was holed up at the Days Inn, and could I come, because he was dying. He was literally dying. He'd been holed up there for 6 days. There were empty bottles everywhere. And in my mind, I thought, yeah, serves him right. I'm calling Mike the Prick, because Mike the Prick says never go on a 12-step call alone. And I called Michael P. And I said, let's go. Let's get in the car. We're going. So I went and picked up Michael P. and we went over to the Days Inn. And it looked just like you think it looked. There were bottles everywhere. It reeked. He hadn't bathed in 6 days. It was just disgusting. Michael P. was also ex-military. And he talked to Dr. J and found out Dr. J was ex-military. So on a wet, windy winter Wednesday night, we are across the Appalachian Mountains headed for Hagerstown to the closest VA hospital. It took, I don't know, about an hour to get there. Michael P. talked to the admin people, and we got him in there. And I'm glad Michael P. went with me. There were two smells in my car that night. I don't know when the last time you had a drunk in your car was. I was grateful I had Michael P. with me, because not because I was in danger of drinking, but because it had been a long time since I had smelled that smell. And it was nice to have a fellow member of Alcoholics Anonymous in the car. The other smell I smelled was egg rolls. I looked over at the passenger seat. Michael P's eating my damn egg rolls. I'm going, dude. And he goes, you called me. Well, crap. We dropped Dr. J off at the VA hospital, and I am starving. So we pull into Denny's on the way back to Frederick, Maryland, and I'm eating. And, you know, Michael P says to the waitress, no, I'm full. I'm good. And, you know, it took a couple hours. Michael P. and I talked over my breakfast, you know, about 2 a.m, it's breakfast time. And we get back to Frederick, and about a block and a half on Market Street ahead of my car is Dr. J. And I lost it. That MF-er, we went to all that trouble. How in the hell did he make it back to Frederick? How did he beat us? He doesn't even, he's drunk. We're in a car and he beat us back here. And Michael P. just starts laughing and says, you idiot, did you think this was about him? This was about you and me. This was about you and me. I thought God wanted me to go rescue a drunk. And what God wanted me to do was start calling Michael P. Michael P. That's it. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Michael. We're going to stay on page 91 for the third reading. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. Jake?
Thanks. You know, I don't recall at any point anyone ever calling me an alcoholic except myself. And to this day, my family will refer to me as a recovering alcoholic or a sober alcoholic. But I'm really grateful for that. I knew I was an alcoholic a couple years before I got sober. I would think about it or refer to myself as an alcoholic, and then was really doing it like quite openly the last few months I was drinking, to the people I was drinking with and my friends and people I thought were my friends and stuff. But that's something that I think is like really like just from my own experience and like how I work with other alcohol or other people is that I don't ever try to convince them of their alcoholism or that they're an alcoholic. I use terms like if you drank like me, and I encourage people to be honest with themselves about their drinking and what happens to them when they drink. And this is my experience with it. The one little caveat to that is, and later in some of our readings is going to reference this. I always think of it as like there's a certain amount of like judgment that goes into working with another alcoholic or somebody that you're working with, because you kind of have to assess like if you're satisfied that they're a real alcoholic. Like, I mean, I've sat and talked with people that they want to talk about every other problem in their life except their relationship with alcohol. They want to talk about the job or the boss or the ex-wife or the kids or the ex-girlfriend or the boyfriend or the whatever scenario it is. And they never want to connect it back to alcoholism, and they never want to connect it back to alcohol. And they never want to connect it back to when, you know, for me, when I put a couple of shots of Jack Daniels in me, it sets off this desire to drink. And then everything else goes out the window and there is no plan for anything else. And that to me was one of the like definitive aspects of being an alcoholic, is that I think about it all the time. And then thinking about it all the time leads to me picking up a drink, and picking up a drink leads to me picking up more drinks until I'm physically separated from the alcohol, which is in any form of running out, passing out, leaving the party, not having access to it anymore in that moment. So anyway, I just think that component of, just again, like sharing my own story, and then just watching, you know, like what they talk about, where they want to go with it. And I really believe like I was ready and willing. I didn't want to dance around the issue anymore. I wanted to be like, my life sucks because I drink a lot, but the only relief I get from that is to drink more. And I have a problem with that vicious cycle. What do I do about it? And like, I don't want to talk about my relationship with my dad or my brother or how I'm failing out of high school or me being a total prick. Like, I want to talk about the fact that I wake up at 7 in the morning with a plan. Like, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go to the library, and I'm going to try to get caught up on some stuff. And at 7:25, when I'm walking into school, somebody's like, hey, we're skipping school and we're going to the alcohol thought of it introduced. And then I'm off and running. And like, why I couldn't get away from that. And anyway, like, just again, just like that's my experience that got me here, that helped me understand that I'm an alcoholic, and that there, and then there is a solution to that that's outlined in this book. And being really honest with myself about that, and then just being really straightforward with people that I'm helping, tends to be very effective, because it really, it's either they go find someone else that will listen to them talk about their problems, or they'll be like, oh crap, I'm like that too. Like it says, they'll start relating to what you're talking about and sharing their own experiences with it. And then eventually that gets them to where they want to ask for help. And then you can outline more of what's in this book. So thanks.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Jake.
Michael.
Thank you, Joe. I'm continually grateful for the corporate humility of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never declare anybody an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't declare anybody an alcoholic. The humor is not lost on me. If you're curious to know exactly what AA thinks an alcoholic is, you could look in More About Alcoholism and it's not there. You could look in Bill's story, it's not there. It's not until the chapter called We Agnostics, where they hide it there. In We Agnostics, it says, if you've tried to stop drinking and find you cannot stop entirely, or it's not both, it's either or you find that when you try and slow down, you can't, or when you start drinking, you can't control how much you drink, you're probably an alcoholic. Even AA doesn't say you are. Now, you know, it says you're probably an alcoholic, like we say, well, you may be right, but nevertheless, nobody declares anybody to be an alcoholic. I have to come to that conclusion for my own. I did. Months, years before I got to AA, I knew I was an alcoholic. I came to your stupid meetings, sat in the back with my arms crossed, telling you people I was fine. Making sure that you wouldn't invite me to go bowling or Denny's and then go home alone and be pissed off because nobody invited me to go to Denny's. And I made a horrible mistake, and I went to my sponsor and I said, I think this has been a horrible mistake. And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, I've been going to meetings for what, 90 days now, and you people keep telling me that alcoholics can't stop drinking. And I haven't had a drink in 90 days. Joe, WTF. And Tom did not look over his I'm right, you're wrong glasses at me and correct me or anything else. He didn't take me to page 44. He asked me one simple question. He said, Michael, have you ever said these words? Oh, no more for me, thanks. I'm starting to feel it. He said, that's what normal people say. And, you know, when he asked me that question, it brought back everything. It brought back my entire drinking career crystal clear in one moment. You know, my then wife, Maureen, would say, tomorrow's the first day of school. Little Rosie needs shoes. And I'd come home at midnight with a bottle of Dewar scotch. You know, I'd tell my then wife, Maureen, you know, I'll be home by 6:00. And I'd come home Thursday. This is a tangent. One of the saddest lines in the entire big book to me that hits me personally is the ruined lives of innocent children. I've lived that. And Tom brought all that back. And what he was careful to explain is that I would hear a lot in meetings that we are in a disease of denial. And he said, that's not really true. It's a disease of delusion. Yes. In the doctor's opinion, it gives us those two things. I, at one point, was addicted to smoking cigarettes. And I would light one up because, man, I needed a damn cigarette. And I'd smoke one. And I'd be good for, I don't know, half hour, hour. I could make it through a meeting, whatever. Alcoholism is not addiction. Alcoholism is different. Alcoholism means once I take one drink, I cannot stop drinking. I didn't drink a lot in bars. Look at me. I'm not Jake. I'm me. You march me into a bar and add alcohol, you get beat up a lot. And, you know, I just didn't do that a lot. But the few times I was in a bar, I would find myself ordering drinks before I was finished with my drink. Look at all the heads nodding up and down. Yeah, real alcoholics here. We have a craving once we put alcohol in our system. And the second thing is, when I am not drinking, drinking is all I think about. It's the mental obsession. That's why those of us with time in these rooms ask if there's any newcomers, because we know how hard early AA is. I'm not drinking any. I'm not drinking. But it's all I'm thinking about. It's all I'm thinking about. That's what makes it so hard. If you're here tonight and you're in that place, hang on. Talk to us after the meeting. We know what you're going through. I use everyday language. I don't know what spirituality is, Sponsee. I have no idea. But I know what it looks like. It looks like service work, right? An infinite God probably has an infinite number of ways of keeping people sober. But if you want to stay sober in AA, we strongly suggest you get involved in service work. That's what this step's all about. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Michael. For our fourth reading, we're going to jump over to page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is an alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he lived by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Jake?
Thanks. You know, when I read this, and sitting here listening to you read it again tonight, Joe, and I read it several times over the last several weeks leading up to tonight. I think about my very first AA meeting, not in a treatment setting, but they took us out to an AA clubhouse, and there were five of us. We made our way into this meeting that was this little narrow room that was really long. It had like three of these tables, like end to end to end. And there were eight old timers in there. I mean, like guys that have been sober since like Jesus, you know? And these eight guys, it's not that they didn't want to hear what we had to say, but these eight guys were able to fill up an hour with. I started drinking when I was 15. I got married when I was 20. I had two kids. I was divorced by the time I was 23. I beat my wife. I went to jail. I got beat up in bars. I got DUIs. I went to the hospital with liver problems. I drank for 40 years and almost died, and I'm still having complications with 15 years sober with my liver and cirrhosis and on and on and on, and just this hell-ish pathway of like where alcoholism took them. And then they talked about the restored relationships that they had with their wives, and some of them even their ex-wives and their kids and their grandkids. And they went on to have decent careers or success in other areas of their life. And they all related it back to the fact that they got sober and did it in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that they developed a relationship with their higher power. And they just weaved this all in like times eight. And then we got to the end of the meeting and there was like no room for any of us with, combined, 60 days of sobriety between all five of us or whatever. And I think about that because it's like a moment in my life where it like I feel like that this paragraph is really exemplified. Like they talked about the hopelessness of their alcoholism, and then they and then they offered us a solution, and that's where I got like the line, you know, like after the meeting, I talked to some of those old timers, and I'm like, blah 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 blah, am I drinking and this? And they're like, yeah, that's like you're in the right place. Like we have a solution for that. You know, all the stuff that's running through your brain and that's occurring in your life, we have a way to deal with both of those things. And one of the things that I really appreciate in AA for the most part is, and my experience has been, and I'm going to say this very tactfully. I've had a number of sponsors over the years, and I came to find out that these sponsors were all Catholic. And I didn't pick them because of their Catholicism. I picked them because I liked what they had in their sobriety. And never once did any of those men ever try to get me to go to church with them, or the word is proselytize. Like they didn't push Catholicism on me. They just talked to me about their drinking and about how their life got better as a result of their involvement with AA and working the 12 steps and the tools they used. And that was a really profound like experience for me to just kind of like realize like that's an experience I've been having for a really long period of time that I want to continue, and I want to continue to provide that experience for other people, is that like it doesn't matter. Like I boil it down to like two simple questions. Like, do you believe in there's a power greater than yourself? Are you it? All right, we can talk about whatever you want. As long as the questions, the answers to those questions are yes, maybe, I don't know, and no, I'm not that higher power. And so, you know, like my sponsor and I talk about, we don't get into like theological debates here. We just like, we're like, let's look at the evidence, you know? Let's be honest, like, what was your drinking like? This is what it was like. You know, I put a drink in my face, I can't stop. I was that kind of alcoholic. And then it got to the point where like I wanted it to stop. I had that desire to stop drinking. I didn't know how to capture that desire and actually make it happen. And then you know, coming to AA, one of the things it's going to ask you to do is you know, are you willing to believe in a power greater than yourself, and live by spiritual principles? And one thing I'm really careful is that like I don't try to like outline what all that needs to look like or impress upon them that you need to be as good as this thing is. I'm not as good as doing it at X years sobriety. It's, I always kind of like use the analogy of like a craftsman or a musician or something like that. Like if it's your first time playing guitar, it's going to suck. It's just the way it is, but at least you're trying to play the guitar. But somebody who's been playing guitar for 30 years, like they're going to, it's just fluid. It's just part of them. But if they encountered a piece of music they've never played before, yeah, they're going to have some challenges with it. And it's the same thing with like spiritual principles. Like just start praying. You know, I don't care if you're doing it on your bike or on your knees or in the shower, or if you're praying, like that's, you know, and you know, like let's start taking some inventory, or let's start picking up some coffee cups, or let's start being a service, you know, like let's just start. You know, and let's look at the evidence. Like, here's what happens when you drink. Let's see what happens when you start using some spiritual principles. So thanks.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Jake. So I expressed some gratitude that tonight would allow me to let you get to know me a little better, and rigorous honesty compels me to tell you that all that really great stuff I said last time was for this paragraph. So your takeaway is Michael B. can be easily confused. Which is good, because it'll save us some time. The only thing I would add to what I said earlier about this paragraph is when I was drinking, I knew exactly who God was. Growing up Catholic, I had no doubt. And I had no idea how he worked. It's a mystery. God moves in mysterious ways, don't you know? And I would go bumbling through my life wondering how God worked and why this was this way and why it wasn't that way. And this world's all effed up. Why didn't somebody, not me, do something about it? And what I'll tell you is that if 30 years has brought me anywhere, it is to this place. I know I have less visualization, understanding of a higher power today than ever. But I know exactly how it works in my life. That's the difference. I don't any longer need to know. You people taught me, Michael, there is no magic. If you do what we did, you will get what we got. You know, people like Jake would walk up to me and go, look, I'm no wizard. I did this and I got this. And I would stumble my way through doing this. And the results were a little better. And little by slowly, I got this thing. At all of these, I balked. You know, if there's one piece of hope and good news in all of this, is that the ugly wins count. You know, after the meeting, ask anybody what time in here, Jake, me, anybody. Was every day pretty? No. But the ugly wins count. We're going to go to bed sober tonight, right? We're going to go to bed sober. If it was an ugly day tomorrow, we'll do a little more work on step 6, maybe a little more work on step 10. Maybe tomorrow will be a little prettier. But in the meantime, let's not drink today and we're going to go to bed sober. The ugly wins count. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Michael. I'm going to combine the last two readings and I'm going to give each of you about 5 minutes to stick the landing. So we're going to go over to page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of the other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And then jumping over to page 96, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. Jake?
Thanks. So there's a lot in this. One thing I really want to emphasize is, God, if this were about how many alcoholics or potential alcoholics or just people that came to AA that I've gotten sober and that have stayed sober, then my scorecard would be really, really freaking ugly and really, really, really awful. And everyone would be like, yeah, Jake, yeah, doesn't get to talk at meetings. But that's not the point of this. Like, I don't ever want to take a drink again a day in my life. Like, I'm really clear on it. And I got really clear on that early on in my sobriety. And what this chapter opens up with is nothing will so much assure immunity from that than intensive work with other alcoholics. And my sobriety success is predicated on how willing I am and how much I actually take action in helping other alcoholics, whether they work this stuff with me or someone else, or I'm just the one conversation that led them to another conversation, which led them to another conversation, and they eventually get and stay sober as a result of that. And I've had people come up to me years later that I haven't seen for years that I just have a memory of and tell me that, one conversation I had with them outside of a meeting led them to getting a sponsor, which led them to working the steps, which, and their biggest fear was, how do I get a sponsor? And I tap them on the shoulder and I say, it's five words. Will you be my sponsor? Like, and that's what that woman came up to me at a meeting like 19 years later and went, will you be my sponsor? And I remembered having that conversation with her outside a meeting at Ravensworth. And it was just like, you never know. But for that day, I got to stay sober. And for the rest, the next days, I got to stay sober. One of the things that, you know, I think about it, you know, we explained the program of action, how we made a self-appraisal. You know, there's a paragraph which you don't read, but I always reference it. When it's like the first thing I go to when I start working with someone is it says, never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show them how they worked with us. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you'll do anything to help. I say, that's my job as a sponsor. That's my job in the 12 step. So I'm not going to talk down to you. We're equals. I'm glad you're here. Tell me about your drinking. Let me tell you about my drinking. Oh, I have I relate to that. You have a solution for that. Yes, I do. This is what's worked for me. And then I jokingly say this like in humor, but like the new person doesn't even get a full sentence. They just get a clause, half of a sentence. Their job is to be this, someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. And you know, I'm like, I believe, you know, there's like, what do they say? Like there's a nut for every bolt, right? Like I might not be the best fit, or, you know, like my drinking might mirror a lot of people's, but maybe not all my life experience might not mirror every person. But if I try to be helpful to everybody, and then that increases the odds of me finding the people that I'm going to help best. And I've had this experience in the last couple of years that actually I got sick with COVID back in 2020, and I got really, really, really sick. Like I had medical professionals afterwards tell me that I probably got about as sick as you can be without having to go to the hospital. And it was 11 days of being really like in the bed, hard to even walk to the bathroom, tired, awful, sick. And I remember this very vividly. Like I didn't think I was going to die. If I did die, I wasn't worried about it. But I also remember having this like genuine softening of like my approach to like things. I used to be very like, if you drink like I did, dude, you better get involved. You better do this thing. You're going to read the book. Did you read the book? No. Call me back when you did. Click. Like, and now I'm like, it's more like this. Hey, this is what happened to me. And my involvement in AA and working these spiritual principles and these spiritual tools, my life has gone like this. And I've watched other people's life go like this and lift in all areas, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, everything. And then I've watched the exact opposite happen for people that continue to drink or that leave AA or come to AA and don't get involved. Their life just takes more of a downward approach. Sometimes it's right off the cliff down, but I mean, that was my experience. Like, you know, my alcoholism just dropped through the floor, and that's me hitting bottom. But I don't try to browbeat anybody with this stuff. I just, like it says here, simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for their inspection. Anyway, that's my 5 minutes. Thanks.
Thank you, Jake. Sure.
Okay. What time do you want to wrap up?
Whenever you're done. Yeah.
He must place the welfare of others ahead of his own. Does anybody else strike as odd that this guy ain't even sober yet? And we're telling him, you got to place the welfare of others ahead of your own. Guy ain't even sober yet. I have twice worked with people who weren't sober when I started working with them. Right out of that story earlier. And what I told these people both times was, you're going to have an entire lifetime of sobriety to figure out everything we're saying. but everything we're saying looks like service work. And that's when I gave him the line about an infinite God. An infinite God has an infinite number of ways to keep people sober. We have a way that worked for us. If you want what we have, we suggest you do what we do, and that involves service work. That's what life in AA is. We have a piece of literature called The Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of my very favorite quotes of all AA literature is in that pamphlet. It says, our help, comma, while compassionate, comma, is never indulgent. We have a different way of saying that in the meetings. If you want what we have, we'll go to any lengths to help you stay sober. But it does imply strongly that we're waiting for you to do the work. You know, I would go to Tom and I'd say, no friends, do the work. You know, our help is never indulgent. I'm bringing that up because sooner or later, you stay sober long enough, you're going to get asked to sponsor people. And I want to tell you, I've never fired a sponsee. That'd be a lie. I have no problem at all having a sponsee who declares to me that he's about to take an action I can see is going to be a fork in a light socket. I'm fine if he wants to blow himself up. But when I can see a sponsee is about to take an action that's going to harm another human being, red alert goes up. And that's the only time I'll tell a sponsee, no, you can't do that. And if they decide to do it anyway, our relationship's over. Because what I understand today that I didn't understand when I was gung-ho about saving alcoholics is that my obligation to the suffering alcoholic is not the only obligation to AA I have. I have an obligation to AA to make sure that AA is represented to the public, you know, in a light that keeps us in the public's good graces, right? I'm not to do anything, including sponsor people who insist on harming others, you know, that might detract from Alcoholics Anonymous in the eyes of the non-alcoholic public. That is a calling of each of us, and I take that calling very seriously. I had a sponsee who got a raft of money, and he was going to make up his child support, and he came to me and he said, hey, I can pay off my truck. Didn't the judge say you need a child? Oh, F that B. She's going to spend it on herself. No, the judge told you to pay your child support. He paid off his truck. That was the end of our relationship. How did that man's wife think AA worked? I can't be a party to that. So our help, while compassionate, is never indulgent. If you want what we have, I will move mountains to help you get it. Please don't hesitate to ask. I know Jake feels the same way. Thank you both all so much for having both of us.
Thanks.
All right, at this time, we're going to pass the seven tradition baskets. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. In the baskets, there's also a scannable card for Venmo and PayPal. Can't say those two words. Venmo and PayPo. There you go.
I like PayPo.
All right. A quick word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? James.
James Alcoholic.
James.
It's homebrew. 2 weeks from tonight on the 18th, we're going to have dinner and a speaker. Dinner will start at 6 o'clock. We got plenty of those pretty green flyers. Pick up and take a run wherever you go. Then we'll start at 6, potluck. Speaker will be at 7. And Susie S. from Raleigh, North Carolina, coming down to speak with us. So come out, have a good time. This room will be full. Thanks.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Bryce.
Everybody, Bryce out for Hobbs.
Bryce.
6 nights from tonight at Sweet Sobriety, which means at Virginia Beach Recovery Club at 6 o'clock on Sunday. Travis K. will be speaking. 6 birthday of Sweet Sobriety. Pizza at 5:30, Travis K at 6, cake at 7 at the Virginia Beach Recovery Club this Sunday, which is the 10th of December. Come check out Travis.
Nice.
Thanks, Brad.
Any other announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Literature is available over there on the table. Please see myself or any other home group member after the meeting. If you can fold it, it's free. And I'm waiting for somebody to see how well they can fold an actual bid book. I might give it to you if you can.
You win.
Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting, and please feel free to talk to me. You can also reach out to our email address, which is info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting recordings, audio recordings, and upcoming events are also posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which, sorry, Michael, will not be at Denny's, but it'll be at Stella's.
I'll be there.
Right down on Colonial.
I'll be there.
In closing, thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everybody will have a chance to come up and say thank you to our panelists, and let's give them one more round of applause. I've asked David to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Everybody, I'm an alcoholic named David.
David, hi, David.
Our big book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, David. And now for those that care to join, we're going to close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Wait, don't we have anything in 2024 biscuit pot?
Serpy pot's coming. Yeah,
so have a moment of silent meditation to do with as you see fit, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Who gave us the gift of today.
My Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen. Amen.